I reckon that thing you're talking about, I think it's filming.
It might be.
I saw something in the news and there was a film in it.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the second episode of There's a Film in That.
There's a film in that.
There's a film in that. Actually, you know that thing John was saying in the pub? I reckon there's a film in that.
There's a film in that thing.
Where we are attempting to create the first ever podcast written feature film. Just a quick recap for everyone. In our last episode, we all pitched three ideas each, so nine in total.
Maths.
From which we then picked Ryan's hosepipe ban in an English cul-de-sac idea.
Win.
Which we will now be taking forward to develop throughout the rest of the series.
But the first thing we want to say, actually after that, is thank you for everyone who listened to episode one.
Thank you very much.
We really appreciate it, and thanks for all the feedback, both positive and negative so far.
Yeah.
One of which was that we didn't provide any contact details. So
we suck.
We've rectified that, but we thought we'd set up the second cliffhanger of the series and make you wait till the end of episode two.
What a bunch of a-holes.
So what was the answer to the first cliffhanger for all of those people on tender hooks?
So, yes, first episode cliffhanger,
tender
whether
hooks.
Annalisa won Oscar for Best Animation last year.
I just want to point out that we've assumed that no one has internet access unless it's for this podcast, because clearly you could have looked it up. But if you didn't, Annalisa was nominated...
So close, but
for an Academy
so
Award, yep. There was no win.
We're now actively undermining each other's levels of expertise on air.
Mm.
So even the more reason to follow us.
Yep.
But on the note of feedback, we thought we should briefly address the idea of feedback. And I thought I'd ask you two, how do you guys accept feedback? You good, bad at it? Ahead of me writing with
I don't
you
want to talk
now?
About this.
No.
Fair enough. Well, that settles that then, doesn't it? That settles that. So...
Feedback.
Yeah, but no, feedback's an important part of the writing process. But we have had people ask us how early you should get feedback. So do you guys have an opinion on this?
I think it depends. If you're asking for someone for their opinion of your ideas or feedback or whatever of something you've written, if it's early on, to be brutally honest, I think you should just carry on writing and keep going with what you've got, because I feel... If you're asking for feedback early on, it's almost like a block to yourself, really. I mean, that's from my thing. If you're going, oh, I need some feedback, what you're not doing is you're not trusting an idea that you had. And I think it takes a lot of courage to write something anyway.
I think it's probably easy to lose faith as well. And it's easier to criticise.
Exactly, yeah.
It's easy for someone to shut down your own idea.
I think it's important maybe just to get writing with your idea. And if you believe it's a good idea, that's probably good enough. You know, there's no guarantee with any idea or any script of what's going to happen with it, but someone's got to believe in it, so it might as well be you, you know? And so then go for it. I'd say I agree with Ryan, once you've got something down or once you've reached a certain point, your idea is more fleshed out, then maybe that's the point to do it. Because we've also spoken, you were chatting before we started recording, Ryan, that early stages, people like your friends and family maybe tend to be a bit too supportive anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not really maybe legitimate feedback.
Yeah.
So they'll probably just encourage you and say go for it, even if they believe it's a crap idea. So maybe early on, it's just best to go for it.
I mean, you could always test them a little bit. You could just come up with the most depraved idea you can think of and then just test them and go, this is my idea. It's about punching a dog in the face. And then if they go, oh, yes, it's good, then you know you're not going to get a proper
exactly.
idea. Because
I mean, that is good, though, isn't it?
There's filming that.
There's filming that. There's a film in that. It's a dog
no, but that's face. Actually, that's not a bad idea. Yeah, throw something else out there that you know is bad and see what comes back.
Are we trying to encourage people to trick their families?
Yes, definitely, 100%.
Yeah.
But I just, I won't.
You know where the love's
but...
coming from. You never loved me.
There you go.
We don't condone punching dogs
no.
in the face. So did either of you receive any particularly interesting feedback?
I
did receive one bit. I can't believe I'm having to do this, but I'm going to... props to my father on air.
Papa. Papa O'Sullivan.
Papa, why have you forsaken me? he did give me a good bit of feedback. He's notorious for not watching films. If something exciting doesn't catch him in the first 5 minutes, he will tend to wander off. He says, not really much happening here, is there? And he'll wander off.
How on earth did he get through an hour and 15 minutes?
I know. So he did, in fairness, he did listen to it, his first ever podcast. But he did have a legitimate point that I thought at the end. We may have spent a long time pitching and discussing ideas. And then at the end, we kind of got people in, pitched to them, couldn't decide anything. And suddenly we picked one and ended it. And he felt he wasn't quite sure why we all like that idea.
Yeah.
So we thought we should mention why we thought this was a good idea to take forward. So, Ryan, when you pitched the idea, what did you like about it?
I liked because of where it came from. It came from a conversation with someone at work about it just being too hot and hose pipes bands, and just remembering that and having quite a nostalgia like flashback when I was a kid and a teenager about, you know, can't use your hose pipe, can't do that. And then as I was talking with the guy at work about this, he was saying about people getting grassed on and things like that. I just found that quite interesting. But the idea that I always quite like the idea of having like kind of like a larger, like an ensemble piece anyway. It's interesting. You get to kind of work out different characters and finding ways to put them all together. I always find those films like some of the most attractive films to watch. Even like, okay, Pulp Fiction's is an ensemble, but everyone kind of comes like intertwines into it. I find that that keeps my curiosity of a film going. Yeah, I hope that answers the question. Human nature is always a funny thing to kind of ramp up and see what happens when you're pushed, even by trivial things. If anyone gets like, if anyone's on the, for example, your journey here, T, you know, it wasn't the best.
Well,
we
won't dwell on it, but it did take me 4 trains and 2.5 hours. So thank you, TFL.
But that would
Transport for London for any of our international listeners.
But that would have been like, that would have done my head in. And it would have been a little thing, and it's patience, isn't it? But at the end of the day, things. When you apply, like, if you can't do something, or if you're not allowed, but it's your, you pay your taxes or you pay your bills to have water or something, for example, in this, like, that would irk certain people, and it's how far you can go with that. That's what I'm looking forward to finding out.
Ash, how about you?
I think what I liked about Ryan's idea was the way that it kind of, it felt like an almost ludicrous thing, a ridiculous thing. The hosepipe band's a ridiculous thing, and the communist state is quite a serious thing. And it's the juxtaposition of the ridiculous against the kind of dark, sinister tale. And that's how I kind of saw it. I found it quite interesting in that perspective.
Nice. But of course, you didn't vote for it at the same time.
Oh, yeah. It's also worth noting that I didn't like the idea. For those keen listeners of it. You know, I do like it. It's true. I think, the treatments that we're going to get into later in the show are going to be interesting in as much as they, I think, will probably each have quite a varied take on what we got from Ryan's telling of the idea.
Yeah.
It's fair to say, we haven't heard the ideas yet. Again, we're doing this on air, but I think it's fair to say it sparked different things in all of us, I presume. You know, I'm interested to see what you guys have gone with it.
Yeah, me too.
And I must say, I like the idea for a number of reasons. Firstly, I thought it was something I've never written before, like a multi-stranded. Again, like Ryan, I kind of jumped to a film called Magnolia in my head, a P.T. Anderson film, an ensemble cast, multi-stranded story where everyone's interlinked. That's why I jumped to in my head with it. And I've never written or tried something like that before, so I thought that would be, A, a fun challenge for me. I thought, B, actually, I was thinking of you, the listener, out there, that it would be, it had the most potential for maybe some intrigue and excitement in the long term. It felt like the most open story to me, that there was, some of the others were quite, I won't say linear, but there was an obvious path with them. And this one, actually, with so many different characters and so many different angles, I thought it might have the most excitement for us to write and create over the course of a podcast. And then, if people didn't notice, I had a couple of quite political ideas last week.
No? What?
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
Some assassinations and various things like that, and refugee crises and
walls.
Online activism and wars and things like
monsters.
That. And actually, but I did, we joked about it at the time, but I thought there was some scope to tie some of that stuff in, and the politics of Little England and suburbia and things like that. And I thought there's some scope in that. And I think it's the other final thing. I'm not trying to be businessy or clinical about this, but I thought there was a nice kind of universal appeal to it, that everyone would have a story that they find. So I was trying to think, if, you know, I guess there's a little bit, if you're about to embark on a long-term script writing project, potentially you want to see that there might be some interest or success at the end of it. Not in a cold way, but I thought there's, you know, it's quite a universal story that would have a lot of appeal to a lot of people. So that's what I got out of it. So yeah.
Nice.
There's a film in that. There's a film in that.
Our homework this week was to go away and each write a treatment based on Ryan's idea. So what is a treatment? I've found a good explanation online, which says a treatment is a written pitch of your story idea. It's a 1-to-5-page synopsis that tells the whole story, focusing on the highlights. Writing a treatment is a great way to test out an idea before a screenwriter commits to writing a script. It gives you a chance to commit to paper the first iteration of the entire story. And that's what we're going to focus on this episode. So,
and we all had a quick look up of that definition online, and yeah, it's fair to say it's a fairly loose definition. I found ones that said maybe up to 25 pages for a treatment, and
I found a 60-page
60. Mm. My
I've
God.
Written a 300.
You might as well
treatment.
Just write the bloody script.
Yeah,
at
right.
That
60.
Stage.
Yeah.
What are you? So I know it depends slightly on the format. So television ones potentially are slightly longer than a feature film, which is obviously slightly longer than a short story and everything else like that. So it depends on your project, to say the least.
Yeah.
But yeah, we certainly 1-to-5 pages in my eyes would be a fair go at it, especially for any new screenwriters.
I think it's safe to say as well, though, it's not a legally bound document or anything like that.
So if it's so fluid, what makes a treatment helpful?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One certainly is that it helps with story development. I think we touched on this in episode one, that like for most people, it's probably not, especially starting out, not the best idea to launch into a 90 to 120 page script blind.
Yeah.
Because it's probably best idea to take one or two pages to at least try and plan out the whole story so you know where you're going. And certainly there's I will segue off a little bit to say that there's other things that you can do to help, which is such as scene cards. I know a lot of writers' room and professional writers get, say, there's 40 scenes in your feature script. What they'll do before they start writing is get little place cards and write out what every scene is and put it up on a big cork board on their wall to see it, so they're actually going scene by scene. Again, just helps break it up. But again, both of those things are that idea that you know where you're going before you start, which is, I think, really helpful.
Yeah.
Because it's a big commitment. And actually, one other thing I just thought when I mentioned that there, to explain to people, the way it works in screenwriting is it's normally recognised a page equals 1 minute of screen time. So for anyone who's out there, so when we say 90 to 100 120 page scripts, that's an hour and a half to 2 hour film.
Yeah.
Roughly a page a minute.
Yeah.
And no, the other thing then that might be helpful with is that if you have a 1 or 2 page document and anyone somehow shows some interest in your idea, that you have something kind of official to hand over to them in the meantime whilst you're still writing your script. So you have it's an official pitch document. So
and does it give you some form of protection by having that 2-page script?
So from what I could tell, certainly in America, for anyone listening over there, you're able to effectively register an idea with the Writers Guild of America. So you can have if you submit a treatment to them. That's what we believe. Don't hold us to that. But again, if you're if you're emailing stuff to yourself or at the time, or dated documents, there's this urban legend. I think it's true. If you post it to yourself,
and you've got a stamped address on it, then it's copyrighted.
Yeah, there's proof of dated when you sent it. But no, I don't know if that's true. But it certainly gives you, it potentially gives you some protection in the long term. So they have a couple of uses, but certainly for what we're about to do, I think the main purpose was to have an idea of where we're heading. And again, it's not locked off.
Plus, we've read a treatment out on a podcast that's been dated. So we were on a win-win on this one, really.
I was going to say, yeah. There's no, yeah.
I'm going to post this podcast.
No one can steal this. there's
you're going to frank it.
There's real proof of it online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what myself, Tin, and Ashley have decided to do is go away, as we've said, write our treatment. What we've done is we've actually kept it to a maximum of a page or thereabouts, for the interest of keeping you guys listening more than anything else, and because my voice starts to sound weird after about half a paragraph. Good luck, listeners. All right, so I'm gonna go first. Fine, I'll do it. All right.
Good.
One thing we didn't mention about a treatment, about what a treatment involves, with it being a, in this case, I've done it as a 3-act. But one thing very important to consider is a working title. Tiernan, what's a working title?
Well, a working title, I guess, would be like a lot of the things. We say you keep things loose when you're still coming up with the ideas. And so we've each given our treatment a title that we thought. Obviously, again, we don't know what each other's is called as of yet. that we can use whilst we're explaining the idea and moving forward. And so, again, it just helps with your story. You can, once you finish your script, you may find that a particular line, a particular character, a particular location jumps out that becomes the final title. But I think also for when you're thinking about your project yourself and when you're writing something, it's good to give it a title. So, yeah, we've all given each other one, but that's not to say it will stick. And when, I mean, this could all be an amalgam. The final idea could be an amalgamation of all three, it's fair to say, couldn't it? We might like bits and pieces or characters or whatever from all the ideas we're about to pitch. So actually, once we've all pitched these titles, that's not to say the one whoever came up with it will stick. We might come up with a new title again.
That's the kind of point of doing this as well as us, all three of us doing this. We're not going to vote on who's got the best treatment or anything like that. We're going to hopefully, you know, like a big block of three different colours of Play-Doh, smash it all together.
Beautiful.
And beautiful. Create magic.
Beautiful imagery.
Yeah,
I'm expecting more of that from the treatment now. Three blocks of brown Play-Doh stuck together in a big lump of shit.
On that note, my working title is simply Pipe.
Bold ready? Choice.
Nice.
Yep. Okay, so...
You have the floor, sir.
Thank you. We meet the cul-de-sac. It is June, it is 34 degrees Celsius, and it's been that way for the past 5 days. And from what the weatherman says, it will be this way for the next 2 weeks. It is a Sunday, yeah. There is a couple eating lunch in their garden. A man washes his car outside his garage, and a group of teenage girls are sunning themselves and listening to music in another garden. An older man is tending to the shrubbery in his driveway. The suburban dead-end road has a peaceful, respectful buzz to it. Like all neighbourhoods, there is a fair amount of secrets and stories between them, some relatively harmless secrets, and other things that have been told in confidence. Several residents of the neighbourhoods are preparing for the Garden of the Year competition, which is going to be televised in a few weeks from that resident's home.
Nice.
Okay.
Exciting.
Well, with the heat wave expecting to carry on until the end of the summer, the local government has enforced a zero-tolerance hosepipe ban. At first, the neighbours behave and abide to the rules, but as time draws on and the gardens start to brown and people start to take the ban for granted and use their hosepipes. One of them, however, understanding the impact of breaking this law, decides to rat on their neighbour, call council on them. This sparks a level of distrust and speculative behaviour between the residents of the cul-de-sac. Everyone has their own idea of who said what, but no one wants to say anything just in case. Behaviours that would not usually bother people are now become massive issues that one person might have with another person. As time draws closer to the Garden of the Year competition, the tension rises higher and higher, resulting in some people taking drastic measures to use their hosepipe. A normal functioning neighbourhood is about to be ripped apart. Divisions are showing, small factions are forming, and a once democratic society has morphed into a communist state, and rebellion is going to happen. In the week of the competition, the tensions have reached boiling point. Two or more households have been dobbed into the council, and as a result are facing a harsher punishment and have been made an example of. This pushes a faction of residents over the edge. So the night before the big comp, The group break into the prize-winning garden and destroy it. The ruined garden is a button for all-out cul-de-sac war. A battle royale ensues. And that literally fights kick off. Old people fighting young people.
I hate to see that. Hate
dogs
to see
getting
it.
Punched again.
Filming that.
Yep, they're filming that. Things kick off. At the end of the fight, though, there are battered bodies spread out all over the close. One person is left standing in the middle of the carnage in some I've seen things man 1,000-yard stare. Clouds open up and it rains. The last resident standing snaps out of it, looks around at the carnage and starts to make their way back to his or her home. One by one, all the residents make their way home, apart from the garden people. I call them garden people, people that do the competition. And they scramble back to their garden and try and fix things before the judge arrives. No one's learnt anything. That's the end.
Wow.
Very nice. Lovely treatment.
Thank you.
Lovely treatment.
Good job. How much of that had you already formed when you thought up your...
Fuck all. No. I had the idea... It's hard, isn't it? Because I think this only gives a broad a broad thing of the story. So the idea is more of the idea again. This comes in of what people, how people handle things. You know, if some, for example, I wrote a list actually of things that people, neighbour, you get irked by your neighbours for doing, i.e., cutting down half your tree that's hanging over into their garden or something, or I don't know, a dog pooing on the garden, or it could be anything, like little things, and those little things are the things that spark that kind of friction between
stack up, don't they?
Yeah. And I think that with this, with the putting the competition in, this was something that came in. I felt like just having people getting annoyed because of a hosepipe ban can happen, but there has to be conflict. Because guess what, guys? Drama's conflict. And having that in there, it puts a time frame on it as well. If they know this garden has made, and it's not everyone's involved. My initial idea was that everyone in some kind of, you know, like community was going to have like garden of the year, and they're all going to work on this one person's garden. But then it kind of, or even actually, it was going to be like a street, like cul-de-sac of the year or whatever. And that was that kind of worked, but then it would have gone nowhere. Whereas if you've got it working as like us versus them, it's that whole kind of thing on society, you know, like there's a status thing for different people, and people get jealous of other people's ideas or other people's what they're doing in their garden, things like that, you know. But it's yeah, I guess it's kind of building that from going, well, look what they're doing, can't we just chill out in the sun or whatever. So yeah, that's I think the idea still stays that it's about the little thing, which just like you say, just this juxtaposition as well of this little thing gets sparked up, but also everyone's having to play the game to a certain point, and it's seeing what happens when people like just snap over the littlest thing.
Very good, Ash. Thoughts?
I really like it. I think. It's so far away from where my brain went with the concept.
And mine, I will say.
I think everyone likes that Little England kind of suburbia story. It's the reason that I love things like Hot Fuzz so much, I suppose. And I think there'd be a lot of interesting rivalries. That's what I was trying to think of. You could play up lots of little rivalries and uncover lots of things, past events that you can bring out
the backstory of the cul-de-sac
For each of the participants of the competition. I do like the competition. I think it's good to have that. It builds up towards something. But what was the ending, that the heavens opened?
Ultimately honest, I didn't know where it was going to end, and I was going to justify it with, well, David Lynch doesn't know when things are going to end, does he? But that doesn't really help anyone's argument in this. I like the idea of it becoming just a fight, just a full-blown fist fight of people losing all airs and graces about themselves and all the personas that they have on, and it just ending up in a ruck. It's got to that point. And you know, the other thing which is really important, I left it at the beginning, was the temperature, because the hotter things are, the more, like, the less time you've got for things. You know, if you're in a hot room at night and your fan doesn't work, or you haven't got a fan, you go to Argos and all the fans are gone, and you go to bed, you have a shitty night's sleep usually, don't you? You know,
well, everything. Yeah, it's the temperature is the metaphor for the stay at the cul-de-sac, isn't it? The old internal turmoil. If I said that right? Yeah.
Is it the MacGuffin?
Could I don't know.
What's a MacGuffin, Ryan?
Isn't it the thing that drives the story?
No, but it's my understanding is it's the fake one.
It's the ruse that.
Yeah, it leads you somewhere, but it's ultimately nowhere.
Bit like every episode back in the day when The Simpsons was good, every episode of The Simpsons did like a MacGuffin at the beginning. It had no relevance to the story, but somehow did. But
then, in a way, I think I could be wrong. We should
cut all this bit out.
We probably should check this before we edit it in. But I think a good example maybe could be the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. It's a thing that kind of drives the story without actually ultimately being anything.
Well, if you look,
and I know Inherent Vice and Thomas Pynchon, the author, is famous for his MacGuffins, MacGuffin upon MacGuffin upon MacGuffin, that lead nowhere ultimately.
Inherent Vice does lead. I really like
that's
that film.
Endless MacGuffins.
Also, if you watch at the very beginning of the Lego Batman film, the airline is called MacGuffin Airlines.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah,
there you go.
Nice bit of trivia there. Trivia corner. We should come up with a jingle for that.
Answering more questions. I just had a sudden thought. Sorry, just to go back to the story.
Please do.
Could you, and as an, are we giving just your idea sparked something in my head. So this this heat wave that they're suffering through is presumably just a standard every few summers we have one of these dramatic hosepipe bands. But could it be something more sinister at work? And then this cul-de-sac are playing through this normal flower garden of the year competition, but in a situation where they're in the middle of some kind of massive climate change breakdown. So there's some huge, horrific thing happening in the background, and they're like ploughing on as normal and pissed off that they can't use their hose pipes and beating each other up and completely not seeing the bigger picture that's seeing behind it.
Yeah, like a comet.
We could get Al Gore involved. He'd love that.
He loves a bit of that.
He'd love that. Al Gore as the flower judge. Yeah.
You're not seeing the bigger picture.
Standing amidst a burnt garden. No, that's a nice thought. Nice thought. Because I have another thing with that, and I very much enjoyed the idea, I must say. I think the flower show gives it great framework. Mm. It sets, like you said, like a time limit on it. Sets stakes. There's real things at stake here. People's gun, people pry, which is an important thing in writing, the idea of stakes and what matters. And the idea of people's gardens and the respect and pride of their neighbourhood and their house is at stake. So I thought that was very nice. You did intrigue me, though, with the TV angle, which I then sadly felt petered out was my only, maybe, I don't want to say criticism, but I was hoping that it would all culminate in the, when you're talking about the fight, the ruck kicking off. I thought, that culminates, coincides the subplot of the television, if those two come together at the same time and this cul-de-sac then becomes infamous for the cul-de-sac biggest that ruined the flower show.
I'd love that.
Because that's the idea of subplots and main plots coming together at the end in your climax. And when you tease the TV, you think, I hope that's coming back for whatever happens.
It never even occurred to me on that.
That could be
occurred to me. I kind of just thought, well, if they're there, that was the pressure of it. And then, at the very end, for example, if they're scrambling to sort the garden out and they're picking out, the broken flowers and all that stuff. And then they turn up and they're like, what happened? Yeah, you're right. That would have been cool. But if they turn up mid...
If it raised the stakes even further, if it's televised when it all kicks off.
Yeah.
And I know, I think we've all been there when a parent or someone, a friend has flicked over to the Chelsea Flower Show and I thought, I wish someone would punch someone. You know what I mean? You just want it to kick off for that. That'd be amazing to watch.
Just to see, yeah.
But actually, having said that, the thing
every
I really
time
did
it's
like...
all I think of is...
I have a real love of fake hero moments. And so when you were talking about the end of The Last Man Standing and the idea of someone just picking up a hose amidst the carnage and just spraying it, I love the idea of that imagery. Yeah. That would be an amazing end. Hero moments. Like just staring over the television cameras slowly find him in the centre of the cul-de-sac. Just waving his hose around. That could be cool. I did like, so I, when you were talking about that, I got some nice imagery in my head. But I think there's a lot of really good stuff in there.
Cool.
Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Awesome, good job.
I'm going to close down the laptop now. I'm not.
Very good. Ash, would you like to take the floor, sir? It is yours.
Yeah, I'd love to.
And Ryan and I, in the little bits and pieces we've been doing, I know we've occasionally dabbled in treatments before, but I believe this is potentially your very first treatment, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is. In fact, this podcast is really the first time I've tried to write anything like this.
Nice.
So I did panic at points that I'd gone completely off topic.
I'm going to judge you.
And please
so
do.
Much.
Judge and jump in as much as you want.
Well, for me, that's the exciting thing. Because I know we all pitched last week, but we effectively heard very little on any idea, really. There's endless places we could go with it. So I'm quite excited to see. I like that you've gone off topic.
I have probably gone a little bit away from Ryan's original idea. I think, if I can waffle at the beginning for a bit, what I really loved about the idea in itself was... and I think I said this earlier in the podcast, but how it almost feels quite farcical. And what I really wanted to focus on was finding a reason that someone would get snitched on for using a hosepipe that would then uncover something really dark. So I was trying to do a kind of very dark.
It was a
comedy.
It was a gateway into another world for you. The hosepipe, effectively, was it?
Yeah. It was like an accidental reveal to something much more sinister happening. So
nice.
I am excited.
Yeah, I mean...
So do you have a working title?
I do. The working title is called Dry Snitch.
Dry snitch.
Which is an expression I've learnt exists.
Baby
this
driver's
week.
Cousin.
Is it?
I don't know.
Oh.
Baby driver's cousin.
I don't know.
I don't get it.
You miss sometimes. I throw a lot of shit out. You miss sometimes.
Not Play-Doh. Okay, you're going to have to bear with me because this idea is a little bit far.
I should
not start off in the cul-de-sac.
Ooh.
Two marine biologists graduate from university with huge debt and poor career prospects. There's not much call for marine biologists in central London. Intrigued?
I am.
Very intrigued.
They get mixed up in the wrong crowd and through happenstance end up running an illegal piranha farm for a local gangster who uses their services as cleaners to get rid of bodies. With me so far.
Wow.
They keep the piranhas in a tank, in a white van, but are persuasively asked to move to the suburbs and set up a farm. The boys have convinced their girlfriends, Anna and Lisa, that they run a window cleaning operation. They have to convince Anna and Lisa to move out of central London. They do so by showing them the amazing houses they could afford to buy instead of the small one-bed apartments they live in. Their girlfriends both commute back from their new suburbia to their high-flying jobs in the city. This is a source of real tension, and they make up for it with regular drinking and partying sessions. To facilitate this, they must go searching for a dealer in suburbia. The guy they find is pretty scary and infers that if they need anything, they should call him. Life goes on like this for a while until Anna makes an arrangement with her high-flying job, which means she is able to work from home. At this point, Lisa is left to commute on her own, and she feels like the boyfriends and Anna have betrayed her, so she takes it upon herself to exact a little revenge on the group. We start to see the nasty side of Lisa, who uses snitching to try and drive a wedge between Anna and her boyfriend. Things like Lisa telling Anna that she thinks Anna's boyfriend looks like a celebrity when he smokes, knowing full well that he's a secret smoker. Or Lisa telling Anna that she saw her boyfriend's new bike get delivered and it looks very fancy, knowing full well that they're trying to save money. Lisa sows all these seeds of mistrust, which drive Anna and her boyfriend close to breaking apart. Then, along comes a midsummer hosepipe ban with an advertising campaign from the local council that encourages neighbours to snitch on one another. Both of the guys fill their window cleaning, piranha-filled, van on the sly. There is much curtain twitching. Lisa snitches on Anna's boyfriend, who she sees filling up his large water tanks next to the van one morning. Anna receives a threatening letter from the water company and pieces together that Lisa is the one that snitched and realises that Lisa has been driving a wedge between her and her boyfriend. Anna reveals that she knows Lisa has been snitching on her and during a scuffle with an electric winch-operated hose reel accidentally kills Lisa with her own hose pipe. Anna, driven by pure panic, calls the drug dealer and enlists his help to get rid of the body. He says he'll sort it out. He knows some guys. Lisa and Anna's boyfriend get the call to go to Anna's address to clean up a body. Lisa's boyfriend, knowing that Anna had planned to confront Lisa, keeps this information from Anna's boyfriend and drives to the house under the pretense that he needs to pick something up. The door goes. It's Lisa's boyfriend. Anna thinks she has to make idle chit-chat and keep him from seeing the body, but of course, he already knows. He asks her for help getting something from the van. And that's the end.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. I'm gonna throw out a round of applause for a man's first treatment.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Very good. Winner, winner.
I imagine people, podcast listeners, clapping around the globe right now.
Ah.
That was very good.
Thanks.
I thoroughly enjoyed that.
I like that.
I did enjoy you called them Anna and Lisa after we'd have quite in-depth discussions about Anna and Lisa.
I've got a feeling.
I feel you didn't reach for the names too much.
I've got a feeling that's exactly where the names came from.
Dark comedy is my favourite genre, and I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of great twists in that. I think there's a lot of really good stuff. I like that you used the hosepipe band as kind of a midpoint for it to kick on again.
Yeah.
I thought that was some interesting characters. Because what was your title?
Dry snitch.
Dry snitch.
There's a concept I wasn't aware of. So it's when you snitch on someone, but you don't directly tell on them. You infer in a story that they've done something wrong.
Very good.
In improv, that's called pimping someone out.
Pimping someone out.
For example, if you were doing an improv game and you went, oh, Ashley, Do you remember that time when you sung that amazing song in Japanese backwards to us? Everyone wants to hear it. Do it now.
Ah, you just put them on the spot.
Yeah, so it's ultimately putting someone on the spot, isn't it?
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, I thought that was a very, really good plot. I thought there was lots of great twists and turns.
Yeah.
Really, like a really interesting world that I'd like to explore, like gangsters and piranha farms and everything else like that. Because I think it's fair to say there's a lot of, like, you know, action films and thrillers and comedies that throw out the idea of shark farms or piranha farms that bodies are disposed.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know, a little bit about the guys who make them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's certainly
what's
an
avenue. What's the thought process in that?
What's the qualifications for that? And marine biologist. It does. When you take a step back from it, it seems that that's probably your best qualification.
I mean, it is a nightmare getting marine biology work in central London.
I mean, I can imagine.
Unless you can imagine. Thames.
That was, I'd say, not necessarily criticism as such. I think that was the one area I felt slightly misled by opening about the two guys, when I feel really it was more a story about the two girls.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, you could even swap roles around on that. In fact, that kind of, in my opinion, is a suggestion of that if you had the girls that were doing the marine biology... Mm. And they couldn't get the jobs, and the guys are city boys, for example.
Yeah, kind of playing against. Kind of playing against type as well, then. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and then they're the girls. The girls are the ones that are going, yeah, fuck it, all right, we'll get rid of.
Yeah, it could be a really well. It's tough actually, because there's quite a lot of interaction between. Who do you see as the lead characters, the guys or the girls? Yeah. For me, it felt like the girls as the story went on. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. My original idea. Formed out of enjoying the notion that people have to get pushed out of central London. So my first story was just, it was almost a drama family tale about a single mother who had to move out of the city because she couldn't afford to be there anymore.
Yeah.
And then I got hooked into, I really wanted the hose pipe, the hose pipe reveal, as it were, to be something really dark. So you think that they're just snitching on something and then it unlocks something really
Yeah, that's clever.
Dark.
So like then you've got the council come around and there's like half a body floating in a tank. Mm.
But in terms of I guess the girls take all of the focus because the story is about them going from really close friends to their relationship kind of breaking down as they get fed up with living in suburbia and missing the bright lights of the city and it's their relationship that ultimately ends up in the worst place possible, and the guys are just the cleaners that. You know.
And can I ask? I say I know we're working through these ideas through. It's not to say you have to decide, but maybe one thing I can't decide in my head, having heard that, is the tone. Is it farcical at times, or is it pure dark comedy? Or because I can kind of weirdly imagine a kind of Tina Fey type film taking on that.
Yeah.
Or I could imagine it being far darker. At the same time, so do you have a particular route that you saw with it, or?
Well, I guess I wanted the hosepipe band to be a real turning point. So in my head, it was going to be quite a straight, out of the city drama, and then that was going to suddenly become really farcical, like the moment in Fargo, the series where Martin Freeman hits his wife with the hammer.
And spoilers, people.
Spoilers. Yeah. It's in the first
minutes. It's in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. I think we should maybe just do a disclaimer for spoilers for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, we will spoil things for you.
Yeah, good point.
We won't spoil anything. Ideas. I don't think we'll spoil anything new, but we'll certainly, we may spoil a lot of older, well-referenced films.
Yeah, and then we go, you have to see it, especially the bit at the end.
Yeah.
When you find out the Kevin Spacey...
That film was ruined for me.
No, me too.
Izzard.
I watched the last 10 minutes of that film. Before watching the whole film,
you just ruined that for yourself.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I think Channel 4 ruined it for me.
Damn you, Channel 4.
Yeah.
So, to go back to your question, so I saw it as moving really from being something quite serious to being something so farcical that it was over the top comedy. If that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, I really Piranha Farms really intrigued me now.
Yeah,
that's really caught my imagination.
Well, I was trying to think up what is the most illegal thing you can do with water, which is just a really abstract train of thought.
Mm,
I was trying to work out whether like backstreet water birthing clinics were worse than piranha farms.
Mm. Yeah, if you're making like
growing drugs seem too obvious. Making
what would you grow?
Moonshine,
yeah. But why would you bother making that?
Why would you need a hose pipe?
Yeah,
you only need a hose pipe if you're filling up your piranha tank in the
true
van.
Yeah.
That's true. He's really thought this through.
Yeah, you've put in a lot of thought.
I imagine it's like a beautiful mind. He's got hose pipe in the centre of his bedroom wall and all these things coming out of it.
Ed Harris.
And it just says piranhas everywhere now.
One of the things I did find out when researching hosepipe bands is that you can actually be a window cleaner and it's not a violation.
I found out some random shit.
I did not research hosepipe bands.
I totally did.
And what effort are you putting in here, Tim?
Well, who knows?
I want to find out. That's a nice segue. Let's find out.
Let's find out.
Oh, is that, you're flipping it on me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he reaches for his notes
to open up the treatment of the hose of God.
Wow.
So
it wasn't a plural of, you know, God's girlfriends.
Not the hose of God.
The hose of God.
God's hose.
The hose of God. So.
God's God. Hose.
In different area codes.
All over the world.
Area codes.
Angels.
Cool. Well, it's terrible when the intro music's the best bit of your pitch.
Hey.
All right. So, the Hose of God. So, a typical cul-de-sac in the heart of Middle England. Children play football in the brief moments of summer sunshine, whilst behind closed doors, strained marriages, passionate affairs, casual racism and local politics are just some of the issues that are acted out and debated in a never-ending cycle. But if there's one thing that can unite a divided cul-de-sac, it's a hosepipe ban. The hatred of the local council and their petty rules can bring together even the most diverse of residents. So when a sizzling July rolls in and the hosepipes run dry, then the residents of our cul-de-sac briefly come together to fight the council. Firstly, simply through their constant gossip during their huddles together on street corners, then on to local school hall meetings, and finally on to protests outside the town hall. And whilst their gardens may be scorched, the spirit on the cul-de-sac has never been stronger. That is, until the government are forced to admit that they have no idea when the rain will come. The reservoirs are running dry, and soon the hosepipes will be the least of their worries. As the days roll on and the taps are turned off and the residents begin to turn on each other, as the rations of water being dropped up at the end of this road become the prized commodity, causing old feuds to raise their ugly heads as violence and snitching threaten to tear the community apart. Tensions then rise further when the sick, young and elderly residents of the cul-de-sac start to drop like flies, and people are forced to admit that this may actually be an act of God and nothing to do with the council. Noah's Ark in reverse. The remaining residents are forced to examine their own behaviour and attitudes towards each other as they are forced to address the question of who will be spared and, perhaps more importantly, why.
Oh, that's so good.
God. He's got weather.
He's got hope. Soundtrack by Ludacris.
That's great.
So I love a high concept thing. That's my go-to thing in my head.
And that is very high concept.
And I just thought, yeah, it'd be interesting. Like, yeah, it feels like small local politics, a hosepipe ban. What if it's part of something bigger? Say, and then I thought this idea of, you know, the opposite, Noah's Ark in reverse.
Who said that earlier, though, about that?
That's what I was thinking, you know, if you came from the drought perspective, and I said, what if it was something bigger? I do love that idea. I think that's the secondary angle that I was looking for, certainly when I was trying to build an idea around it, that there was this grandiose concept set behind the whole thing.
I think when I was thinking about my one, the thought of a grandiose idea came to me, but I couldn't fathom it, but I was steering myself away from it because I wasn't sure how that, I wasn't confident about how that would come and where it would go. But listening to that, it's the same. It's got the same kind of core ideals of that layer of people being nice, even if they are, you know, like you say, like casual racists or you know.
Well, that's what I think. I wanted them. There's a lot of, again, I just spoke about last week, all the stuff that's going on in the world, and lots of different diverse opinions, a lot of, you know, I guess, hatred and all the other things that come with it. And so, yeah, that everyone on this cul-de-sac was maybe forced to examine, and people going a bit mad with what's going on. They're forced to turning on themselves and examining their own behaviour and maybe what could spare them, what would make the water come back on for them.
So
and then I thought it could be interesting with the characters we go on to develop next week is decide, does anyone make it and why then?
Well, that was the same with mine. I'm a glutton for the hero not winning, not in the way they should win. Mm. So I like the idea that the lesson to be learned is that you shouldn't have been a dick in the first place. Mm. You know, and just losing. It's not a great film, but it does linger in my head, which means there must have been some points of it that are quite strong. There was this film that came out a few years ago called The Divide, and it had Michael Biehn, that Milo thingy, the guy who was in do you remember Heroes, and he was in Rocky Balboa, who was Rocky's son, and it had I can't remember who was in it. There's a few other people in it, and it's essentially about a bomb goes off in Manhattan, like there's a nuclear war, and they end up getting to a bunker in Midtown, in this bunker, and Michael Biehn's been holding this bunker thing. Anyway, they're forced to examine their themselves, their characters, who they are, and they just digress into the worst type of people. Mm. Like they become like normal people, become like massive rapists and like they're falling apart because of radiation and shit. Mm. But the end of it, no one really wins from it. It's just one woman who's clearly gonna die gets out. Well, spoiler, gets out.
That's one. Last week it was I hadn't seen that, and this week it's let's spoil everything. Yeah.
Overkill. But what I think I like about that is that, yeah, I like the concept that it's they're forced into a position where like they can either go one way and just deal with this in the most honest way they can, and like it's almost like I need help, because if there's a deity up there doing that, then it's going ultimately they're going to end up going, God, I need your help. But on the other hand, they could go the other way, which is the snitching, which is the unhandedness, which is the us v them thing.
Well, I thought the interesting thing is it's almost could, weirdly, I thought I started to think about it in my head, it's like almost the way we'd write it, almost could become a game of Cluedo. Because you'd look in, the start of the film could be looking in at particular characters, people having fairs, the racists, whatever we want to go with.
Yeah.
And then as they start to drop off and the few are being spared, and you maybe say if it's left that maybe we, if it was one to survive or none to survive, but say it's one to survive, it's like who's to survive and why and what did they do?
Oh, it's like the people in the boat thing, isn't it? Who would you say?
Yeah, so it could be for a number of things, and it's whether, you know, we could have an interesting discussion to be had about who we want to save and why, and, you know, what do they do, or is it for the right reason or is it for no reason, you know? There's a lot of big debate, and they say it could again. Is it whether it ends with one hero moment again? Say like one person left standing, and yeah. So I just thought that could be interesting. And say I like that. For me, when I heard the idea, it was a little thing like a hose pipe ban. Unlocking something much bigger. You know, and I like films that spiral out of control like that. You know, so that's where it took me. So yeah.
We've got a big fucking task on our
hands. I was going to say, in fairness, like, because Ash and I both, it's interesting to see actually where we all went with it, like from an idea of, you know, hosepipe ban.
Yeah.
We got all sorts. We got a flower show gone wrong. We got a piranha farm gone wrong.
Naturally.
And we got
an act of
the
God.
Apocalypse gone wrong. So there you go. Wow. So, and I say, but the nice thing I think now is, for the listeners, I think last week we all voted and we had to pick one. But I say, certainly I think there's different elements from each that now could be pulled in and different characters.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there is one side of it, which is there's not always, it'd be weird if in every street there was someone like this, of someone who's like, you know, the end is nigh. Mm. And that's I wrote a bunch. I know we're going to go on to characters next week, but I wrote a bunch of characters down, and I just wrote one line for one called God Catman. That was like, because it's just a reference.
If there's a tease for episode 3, people, God Catman will be revealed.
There we go. But there's always, I guess the one thing we have to kind of come up with is, no matter what is included, is where this goes, because it has such a big ending on your side of it. Mine was inconclusive because I couldn't think of it in that respect, but the fight was the biggest thing I could come up with based in an insular, like, domed, like, society. About the one Ashes. I like about Ashes is that, obviously, what you've written in a character base in that respect, that it's focusing on four people. So to me, your one is something which is out of all of ours, is the one that's going to fit into any of it, because of the concept of this super fucking dodgy job of doing that, at the very least, the job side of it, of disposing of bodies through a piranha farm.
That's but I mean, taking back from that, I guess what I was trying to drive at was that in this suburbia, there was something really sinister happening in the background, and that could apply in any of our stories.
Yeah, exactly what I mean. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, but if we would go plonk it in this one, plonk it in that one, my one, Tiernan's one, for example, it would still work that way. Mm.
No, certainly.
That's an interesting. Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where we go now. To be honest, I feel a bit
tough, isn't it?
Mm. It is difficult. Mm.
So there's elements I like from my point of view. From Ryan's, I liked the flower show as a framing device. And actually, from what you just said about Ash and his tone and his characters fitting into either of our stories, I think your framing device of the flower show could fit nicely into both of ours. Yeah. I think it's a really nice thing to set a deadline on. For instance, I could still see from my story the act of God, but it's still being framed through a flower. Yeah, for everyone listening in, we are actually in the middle of a monsoon. If anyone
we're
can
talking
hear
about
that.
Hosepipe bands.
We're talking about hosepipe bands in the wettest summer in history. But I could imagine that is a really nice framing device within either of our stories, because it gives it a nice deadline, it gives it a plot, and actually, for instance, as I say, to apply it to thinking the listening, apply it to my one, that it could... Yeah, that people, again, it raises the stakes that if people were dropping like flies ahead of hosting this flower, it still works. You know, it's a nice framing device, puts a finality to it, maybe. So again, there's elements. I think there's the nice thing is there's elements that could fit into each of ours. But I guess we have to maybe decide whether there's one of the concepts we really want to take forward and then apply elements to that. And certainly, and obviously, characters then. Again, I could see. So I could see God Catman in anything.
I can't wait to tell my characters that I've come up with.
I could see the neighbourhood drug dealers or the sinister characters in either of ours as well from yours, Ash. So I think I'm excited because I think there's lots of things that can be taken from all three.
Yeah.
So anyone want to lead that thought of what one potentially we could take forward and incorporate ideas into?
Well, I think I see your two ideas as quite neatly fitting together in a lot of ways, and I think we'd be negligent not to notice that and use that maybe as the story backbone, as it were. Mm. I think it. I think with my idea, I was really focusing on a very small group of people and.
But the idea of this, going back to it as well, taking all the piranhas and drug dealers out of it, the idea of the dry snitch is so integral into what happens in between any of the characters, because it's such a divisive, in human nature it is a divisive thing to do. And if you were to catch someone doing it and you cotton on to what they're doing, it's like, who the fuck are you? You know, like you've hung me out to dry. And that idea of doing that, and then I've never thought I couldn't articulate that into that, but there was ideas. I was thinking that makes total sense. You totally do that. It's a clever way of doing it, and that comes in. And yeah, and then just on a whole singular character thing of, like saying before, I'm going to repeat myself a bit here, but with the idea of these girls and stuff, that's still a subplot in itself into the story anyway, because essentially they all look like outsiders coming in, and that's it's clicky as fuck, isn't it? And like,
yeah, exactly.
Mentality
and certainly, like, yeah, my own early thoughts of characters which I hadn't put into the treatment, but I love the idea, and I'd start to think maybe along similar lines of certainly one of the houses in my cul-de-sac might be new people who weren't yet welcome or fit. And I like what you said about potentially the guys, I believe, that they were city types dragged out into this other world, and I think that's really interesting, along with these two girls who are potentially doing something sinister or vice versa. And so I really like the characters and those ideas that you brought to it, and the idea of try snitching.
Still
phrase of the week.
Yeah,
that is.
The title of this one is dry snitching.
So yeah, cool. So I think to round that up, because again, it's quite. I mean, it's really nice. It's a good problem to have a lot of good ideas and good things. Yeah. And congrats to us all. I think I think they're all pretty good.
Pat us all on the back.
Yeah, well deserved. Well deserved.
We've all done it.
So, from what I say, to round up what I liked anyway, I think I really liked the framing device from Ryan's of the flower show.
Thanks.
I think that's a great setup for the cul-de-sac that they're running this televised flower show and where it could go with that. I like the tone, the comedy, the characters that you brought up, the kind of the potentially the people who are dragged out of the city life into the suburbia that they're not too familiar with, and also like the slightly dark criminal characters that you brought to it, and I say that tone and humour. And then I think I'd say for me what I liked about my idea, because say some of it was maybe not fully formed yet at the beginning, but I like where it goes, hopefully, that actually the Hosepipe Band is this much bigger thing, so it could be a nice place to lead it. So that's my kind of slamming together the three bits of Play-Doh. So any thoughts, guys?
The multicolour Play-Doh.
Were they three brown bits?
No, they were not. Could they have been any more?
I think there were colourful hints of something in there.
The aqua.
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 Magenta.
Magenta. Cyan. We're just reading off tone colours, aren't we?
So let's take this opportunity to jump off air for a few minutes.
Did everyone like those similar kind of thoughts?
I totally agree. I think definitely the idea of a community being so focused on themselves when there's the bigger picture going on is quite a nice thing to have looming. Like the irony, it not being a big cloud, it being a fucking great sun
that's
just heating up the world is quite...
Once again, great. Al Gore does fit into that idea.
Al Gore, if you're listening,
and I feel casting was one of our later episodes, but I mean, you know, we're not going to ignore great ideas as they come. So Al Gore in the lead, certainly.
Al Gore and... Captain Planet.
He's our hero.
He is.
Nice. So, so what should we? I think maybe Ash. What do you think we should do? So,
well,
I think that was dry stitching.
What do you think we should do? So, it's your house. Well, let's take a few moments and just quickly let's see if we can combine our three ideas, facets of our ideas, and come up with a two-paragraph treatment that we can
take forward then to end, like maybe to end this episode on, so people know where the story's going, and then next week we can focus on filling it with characters maybe.
In the meantime, while that's happening, you can always listen to a song written by Ashley Keeler all about Charles Dance.
Who's Charles Dance? Who is he?
Charles Dance, whomever he may be, Lord Tywin was played by Charles Dance, said we, and his death on screen was not too grisly. He was killed by a dwarf from his own family. He started in The Inheritors in 1974, played Klaus in For Your Eyes Only, but was bested by Roger Moore. He was in Last Action Hero and in Alien 3, and also in The Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby. Charles Dance, whomever he may be, Mr. Tulkinghorn in Bleak House when it's on TV, in Gosford Park, and even Ali G. Did I mention he was Clement in Alien 3?
And so now we're back. We just took a few minutes there. We've managed to somewhat gel our three ideas together. So this is, it's a decent effort at it, but again, as I say, we've said earlier, this might, you know, be quite liquid moving forward. But Ashley has the magic piece of paper now to read out our combined treatment to move forward onto our characters episode next. So
good luck, Ashley.
Ashley, take it away.
A typical English cul-de-sac, complete with failing marriages, passionate affairs, casual racism and various forms of substance abuse, is thrown into the limelight when it is chosen to host a televised national flower show. The sudden exposure causes a mixture of emotions amongst its diverse pool of residents, from the reluctant drug dealers desperate to remain out of the limelight through to the ecstatic OAPs who were overjoyed to show off their prized roses. However, the whole event, and the reputation of the cul-de-sac, is then thrown into doubt when the local council force a hosepipe ban upon the unlucky street due to the scorching July weather. Whilst the residents all initially unite against the council, firstly into the form of endless gossip, and then onto town hall meetings and protests, things soon start to fall apart when the UK government is forced to admit that they have no idea when the rain will come. Soon people are forced to forget the council as they begin to acknowledge that this may actually be far bigger than that and could be an act of God, a Noah's Ark in reverse, and that the failing flower show may be the least of their worries, and that the bigger issue is who will be spared, and perhaps more importantly, why.
Yeah?
What did you think?
Oh,
that's
fuck yeah.
Not bad.
Nice.
Not bad.
Nice.
It's now
I'm
one
excited.
Shitty lump of Play-Doh.
The colour's gone.
So, that's not bad. I'm looking forward to working on this story.
Yeah, characters a go-go. If everyone is excited as much as I am to show you God Catman,
yeah. Nice. No, I'm very excited to show you my character who believes in the monster beyond the cul-de-sac walls.
Yeah, nice.
I think so, yeah. We've agreed that the next episode 3, will be characters. And part of our homework is to go away and fill up this cul-de-sac and the houses there with families and couples and children and all the people that are going to live there.
Yeah.
And potentially die at the hands of God now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a happy idea. Right?
The happiest idea ever.
Yeah, so I think, you know... Listeners, who do you want to die? Yeah. Send us your suggestions and we'll put them in our cul-de-sac.
And whilst you're at it, if you could subscribe and follow.
And
last year, yeah, we did promise that cliffhanger,
we did.
We? Yes. So we've been very proactive this week and we've set up... Firstly, we'll go with the email first.
Old school.
Old school email.
Email
so,
time.
We've gone with theresafilminthat@gmail.com. Yeah? There's a film in that@gmail.com. I think it does exactly what it says in the tin. There being T-H-E-R-E.
S.
With an S on. So there being T-H-E-R-E-S. That's S on the end from Ashley. So there's a film in that at gmail.com. So, we talked about feedback earlier. Send us some.
I think the best way to contact us is presumably using our Twitter handle.
And we also, we got a Twitter.
We have a Twitter.
I've never used Twitter before, so I'm quite excited about this.
At a film in that.
Yes, I believe.
A film in that.
There's a film in that. Didn't fit. So we're at a film in that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And we also thought then for further down the line, we should set up an Instagram, didn't we?
Only if people want to see our smiling faces.
We can see us, but
Ryan is now smiling.
But we thought potentially we could put up some casting thoughts there later, some mood boards, all sorts of little bits of film. As the film comes together, we'll
dick
start
pics.
Putting up, dick pics, yeah. That's from Ryan there. So tune
in for
that.
I won't be doing that.
Some visuals to accompany the podcast there. We could do anything. Locations, all the visuals that go with any film. We could start snapping stuff that we
like.
Yeah.
Hats that people on the cul-de-sac would wear. Hose pipes.
Yeah.
We could
get sponsored by Hose Lock.
Yeah. If you know any hose pipe companies that would be interested in this story. Oh, what'd you say?
Hose Lock.
Are we allowed to? Well, I never thought that we're allowed to talk about companies on
I'm sure they're okay with it. And any suggestions you have, if you think things would be useful for us as well, if you want to say, you know, think of a film that maybe we may have seen, may have not seen, that's always quite good.
That was something we decided we'd do, didn't we? We thought we'd... I'll recommend something for you, Dubois. Have you seen Magnolia?
I've seen Magnolia.
Have you seen Magnolia?
I saw it many years ago and I found it great.
So that's my multi-stranded film that I'm throwing out there for both you and the listeners to rewatch.
Robert Altman's Shortcuts.
That's excellent. A good one. Ash, do you have a film you'd like us to watch this week? Multi-stranded, dark comedy, hosepipe related, any of those will do.
I just thought of another one, but it's kind of not multi-stranded, but it is multi-stranded, which actually, if you went back to season one of Twin Peaks... I would say that's multi-stranded. Even though it's not a film, it does have a lot of characters in it that are multi-stranded. All linked to one thing, which is who killed Laura Palmer.
And we can spoil that now. Now, anything you'd like us to watch, Ash? Or read, or anything? Anything you'd like us to think about over the next few weeks?
No, I don't want you to think about anything over the next few weeks. Have you seen The Leftovers?
Don't you dare. Don't you dare steal my favourite reference. which has probably heavily influenced my my idea this week. So that hopefully intrigue you. Go see the Leftovers.
It has not surprised me. Now you've said it.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So nothing.
I mean, the Leftovers is definitely the most referenced content on this podcast.
It is, isn't it? It is. HBO.
Sponsored by the Leftovers. But yeah.
Awesome. I really like it when our podcast just kind of peters out.
Just kind
out.
Of peters out.
Oh,
yeah.
It just peters out. Okay.
Go with that.
Bye.
I think there's a film in it.
I reckon that thing you're talking about, I think there's a film in it.
It might be. I saw something in the news and there was a film in it.